Thank you.
She's walking back to the stage.
Well, I guess we can give her a moment. Okay. Is Mark Bart? Okay. Where was she waiting? Okay.
Now we have a quorum.
All right. So we'll do a self-work right now.
Okay. Okay, we'll get this meeting to called to order here and start with the approval of the minutes, correct? So, Representative Marquardt, would you like to approve the minutes?
Madam Chair, so move.
All right, so the minutes for, what date?
April 11th.
The minutes are approved. There we go. All right, thank you. Okay, so we have Representative Nash up here with House File 1944, and the chair moves House File 1944 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means with the chair's intent to lay over for possible inclusion in an omnibus or further action at a later date. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Good afternoon. This is a bill that you have seen before. I was before you last year. This is the bill that we called VPSEO, and because Chair Davids gave me a big frowny face about the tax credit in it, we have brought it back here to the committee to make a pilot program and a direct appropriation for a school that is really teed up and ready to go to act on these things. So if you remember, the VPSEO concept is very simple. It is that there are kids in high school who know now that they're not going to go to college and they would like to take advantage of a job in some trade. It could be building trades, it could be CNC shop, it could be in cybersecurity. That would make me very happy. But those kids need to be exposed to those things early on, and it is the intent of this bill to expose kids, perhaps like my own son David, who is now a hospital corpsman in the Navy, knew he wanted to be in the medical field but really had nothing that could give him an on-ramp in high school. So we were hopeful that this bill could do something very much like that. So the amendment that I would also need to move, Madam Chair.
Okay, and the chair moves H1944DE5, the author's amendment. All those approved?
Aye.
All right. Any opposed? All righty. Amendment approved.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. That was a resounding vote of approval.
That was
so I do thank you for moving the amendment. And if you look at the amendment, a pilot program would be created in School District 110, which is Waconia, where I live. It is to do just that, a pilot program, a one-off, because we couldn't achieve the larger funding that we were hoping to do last year. But it is a fairly prescribed amount of money, and it is for a school district that has a lot of this groundwork already laid. So with me, I have some representatives of District 110. I have the superintendent, and then I have a person who is joining us, Christine Fenner, that is here on behalf of the school, who is already doing these sorts of relationship buildings right now in the district. And lastly, I wanted to thank many of you who have signed on to this bill. Representative Slocum has been a big supporter of this. I appreciate that. Many of you were also on the bill. So I will now shut up and let the testifiers talk as well.
All right. Whoever would like to start, please state your name for the record.
Hi, Pat Devine, Superintendent of Waconia Public Schools, ISD 110. Thank you for having me, all of you here today. Just want to talk a little bit about kind of our path to be at this spot. This is my fourth year as a superintendent of Waconia Public Schools, and wasn't much longer in the first year of my career there, 4 years ago, that Jim and I met, and we got talking about how can we bring more trades into the school, more partnerships with manufacturers. As you well know, we, you know, as a state, do a really nice job of getting kids ready for post-secondary, mainly four-year college, and Waconia is no different than that. We do a really nice job of that. We have about 85% of our kids go to a four-year college. But we're missing many students that could do vocational, and they don't even know that vocational careers is a great option. And early on, 3 years ago, I met with all the manufacturers in town and says, tell me if there, you know, how much is there a need? I hear there's a need. And obviously you all know that there's an overwhelming need for the labor force and for the industries. And so we started partnering 3 years ago, we started looking at how can we bring an Okehennepin in, do college courses with us, how can we maybe do courses in their facilities. We've set up a lot of the groundwork to make this happen. What we're short on is to have the financing to make it come to fruition. And that's where we have fallen short. Us, like many districts, we're deficit spending, and we don't have a lot of extra money to start new programs. We have the groundwork for it. We have the desire for it. We have the passion for it from the industries and from the school. We just need time to be able to build our curriculums together, find facilities that are willing us to have us go out and learn in the authentic learning spaces, and to make this happen with somebody that can coordinate it all with transportation, with curriculum building. We've been working with the chamber. The chamber's been really gracious with this. They've used Winona and us as two school districts. They would like to help out, but they can't help finance more than transportation and paperwork and maybe some promotional things. They can't do anything with personnel and financing of staffing. So that's where we've fallen short. So we have a great passion. We've laid the groundwork, and we're ready to go. We're just real hopeful that we can be kind of the first pilot that shows how well this can work, and then other districts can emulate it across the state.
Thank you. Another testifier, please state your name for the record and begin.
Sure, I'm Christine Fenner. I'm with Waconia Schools. So what we're doing right now is just bringing everyone together. So we're bringing business owners, teachers, administration. Like Mr. Devine said, we're bringing the Chamber of Commerce involved as well. And we're looking at different authentic learning experiences for the students. We're identifying realistic ways to create new opportunities for students. And like Mr. Nash said as well, to really partner with those businesses. So funding of this program would just really allow us to continue to build the curriculum and to meet those industry needs. And then, of course, we'd want to share and support and promote other districts and schools across the state of Minnesota and share with them what worked well, and be honest and say what didn't work well, and so other schools could do this in the future. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Representative Nash?
Madam Chair, I believe there were a few other testifiers that we're going to...
Is there anybody else who'd like to testify for House File 1944 as amended?
And Madam Chair, as they are settling in, I want to make sure that this is being laid over in this committee. It's not being sent on to taxes as was previously stated.
That is correct.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
All right. All right. Whoever would like to start, please state your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Dave Siegel. I'm the Executive Director for Batsy Housing First Minnesota. We represent about 1,300 builders, remodelers, trade partners, subcontractors. We're having our big trade show this afternoon, so I have to leave after this to go to that activity. The number one thing that our members talk to us about in every meeting I'm at, in every circumstance I'm involved in, is labor. It is the single biggest challenge that our industry faces right now. And we are to the point now where the lack of skilled trades is actually hurting Minnesota's economy and hurting our ability to build homes and commercial facilities as the state needs. And in fact, we're looking at some bonding, and we're looking at some federal infrastructure dollars that are going to exacerbate that problem. So I'm here in support of this initiative, frankly in support of virtually any initiative, and I think this is a terrific one that can potentially expose young people to skilled trades. So briefly, thank you for bringing this, Representative Nash. I think this is a terrific idea, and we stand at the ready to support it and participate and cooperate in any way that we can to make this a successful reality.
Thank you. Next testifier.
Hi, Amy Wallstein. I'm with the Minnesota Precision Manufacturers Association, and I too want to echo what Mr. Segal said about thanking Representative Nash for bringing this issue forward. What we hear in the manufacturing industry is very similar to what they're hearing in the construction industry, that this is the number one issue right now for manufacturers is finding skilled work to work in their industry. And manufacturers are ready, willing, and able to help get the next generation trained. And so what we have kind of seen is the need is to help high schools build programs and work with the technical colleges. We see VPSEO as the bridge between high school technical programs, career and technical programs, and the college post-secondary technical programs. So the more that we're able to do to help those institutions work together and create programs for students, we think that's a great step forward in modernizing technical education and getting more students into skilled industries. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Well, go ahead, Mr. Lundell.
Yeah. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell for Schools for Equity and Education. Just very, very briefly, we really want to thank Representative Nash for coming forward with this bill. I think one of the things, the challenges that many of the districts that I work with have is creating that broad range of opportunities for children, for students, especially at the secondary level. And I think that what Representative Nash is doing here, and this can probably serve as a hub, I guess, trying to find ways to create more technical education, but also then give so students that are ready to take that next step in their education the opportunity to do so. So, again, we really enjoy work. We've testified in favor of this bill at several junctures, and we certainly our strong support remains. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Nash, for bringing this bill forward. And I just wanted to reach out to all the stakeholders that also testified to please continue to reach out to your local chambers and your school districts because, of you know, this is something that's important for every school community. But thank you.
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Nash, for bringing this forward. I would suggest we go even further. Representative Pawlowski had a bill, her higher education, that I think was sent to this committee yesterday that would merge technical colleges back into the high schools with the idea that every high school graduate should have a skill set available that matches the current job economy. And what you would see is those students staying in their local communities, staying within the state. And as I heard from the testifiers, the number one concern I'm hearing is from these various employers who are looking for electricians and welders and nurses and contractors and plumbers. And it's a real shortage out there. And so I think this might be a way to go. I was touring a place in Detroit Lakes, Lake Shirts. They print all these T-shirts. In fact, they were doing them for the NCAA tournament, and it started in the basement. There's two guys from Detroit Lakes who started this business, and they started by using ovens in their parents' basement that they would print on, and now it's a $26 million operation. But they employ, in Detroit Lakes, 40 graphic artists to design their T-shirts. Who would have known? And so, I mean, but, you know, the fact that basically if someone could be trained in that, they would, you know, almost have a job immediately, you know, and so this is the way to go. I almost think the model we're seeing in this school district is statewide, and I think we need to, I like Representative Pawlowski's idea of bringing that together. I mean, it would be a benefit to students to have a skill set, would help employers fit these job needs, and it would save a lot of money for students and parents in the long run. So thank you very much.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as you know, Representative Nash, I really like this proposal, too.
You're an author.
What I'm wondering, though, and I decided to ask Superintendent Devine this question, if you would come back to the table. You know, we already have in statute a number of provisions that would allow this to go forward. So I'm wondering, to what extent is it that you need the $250,000 to jumpstart this?
So I'd say a few things. Madam Chair, thank you for the question. And I'd say a couple, and Representative Erickson, thank you I would say a couple things that that strike out immediately, because we did propose this to our students in the last 2 years. What we find is that, and if I would poll this whole room and say, of all of you that have students coming through school and or have gone to college, how many thought my kid's going to college? And most of you would say, yep, they're going to four-year college. Our parents and our students don't see this as a pathway. They don't see that there's a career path that can be really, really good for them in the manufacturing or the labor industry. Where we need is promotional material and then people that can coordinate to bring people to our school and for us to get out into the industry. Our educators in our industrial tech program do a wonderful job, and we're offering really good courses that can bring experiences to our students. But the authentic learning piece is what we're missing, and that's where this partnership really comes in. And we don't have that in our staffing base right now, and that would be the additional needs that we would have.
So, Madam Chair.
William Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I have visited Bloomington's program, and I know they didn't get any money from the state to jumpstart their relationship with Dakota Tech, and they have a program much like what you have described in or Representative Nash has described in his delete all here. So it seems to me that you could begin this relationship without the $250,000, and perhaps next year we'll launch into Representative Pawlowski's idea of rejoining technical colleges to our E-12 system. But in the meantime, I think there are ways. And you certainly could use 124D.4535, which is innovative delivery, mm-hmm. As a stepping stone if you think you need statutory support. But I think it's possible for you to start this without, depending on how badly you need the money, mm-hmm. But you could start it without that, considering the fact that you can find, I think, I don't know if Dakota's any closer to you than Hennepin, or I know Ridgewater would be a little distance. Mm-hmm. I just want to encourage you to launch this without having to expect the $250,000, because we are wanting our school districts to get involved in these relationships with community colleges, technical colleges, and with industry. And, I'm not sure we're going to be able to jumpstart every program that wants to begin as long as we have the ability in statute already. And I believe Representative Peterson also had a proposal last year that's in law that would also allow this to begin. So that's just a thought as far as I read the statute, that you could start it if you aren't, in absolute need of the $250,000. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Nash. I actually appreciate this article by Ms. Kirsten and agree with it. So in the case of Ms. Kirsten, even a blind pig finds an acorn once in a while, and she seems to have found one. I am wondering on line 1.18 of your bill, or actually the amendment, to be clear. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a minute. You exempt this proposed pilot from 124D.09. And if you want to phone a friend, that's fine. There she is.
So phoned.
What are you exempting, Ms. Wallstein? What is he exempting them from, and why?
Ms. Wallstein.
Thank you for the question, Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, and also to Representative Chair Erickson's remarks on why this piece of legislation and why there's some of where's this interaction with PSEO coming from. As we've been out talking to schools, both at the K-12 side and post-secondary, we've heard that they need a little bit more freedom to be able to collaborate with each other. There's some licensure things that get in the way to staff, concurrent enrollment, dual enrollment, PSEO courses. We think that the new teacher licensure system is going to make a big difference with that, but there are still some things on the secondary side that can be problematic for staffing dual enrollment courses. So we wanted to give the pilot program a little bit of ability to breathe and to be able to innovate and find some ways to staff this with both post-secondary, high school, kind of a mentor-mentee relationship.
Representative Babney?
So last year in working through the tiered licensure piece, I was one who was an advocate for not requiring baccalaureate degrees for CT teachers because of the hurdles that presented. But I'm also, this is a dual enrollment proposal. How does the Higher Learning Commission's requirements about 18, how do their requirements work, and how do we make sure that a student who actually does this or something like this gets the college credit that they think they're getting when they're in the program? I'm not understanding the interaction here.
Ms. Wallstein.
So, Madam Chair and Representative Dabney, part of what we've heard as we've been exploring this concept is that what used to be in practice under we hear it referred to as Criteria 3 or Rule 3, and it's in kind of post-secondary. I don't know that it's a Higher Ed Learning Commission or if it's a MNSCU, MNSTATE piece, but it's just Rule 3, right? And that where it used to be that there could be a mentor-mentee relationship for a concurrent enrollment class, mm-hmm. That has become very challenging for school districts and technical schools to put that relationship together. So the concept that we're bringing forward today is a pilot outside of PSEO that allows more flexibility and innovation just for this district to try some things out so that we can kind of move this idea forward and get to a relationship where there's either like a co-teaching or mentor-mentee relationship.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I challenging, and you might be onto something here. I guess hearing Chair Erickson's comments as well, I mean, this is the second day in a row where we've had a district come in and say, we want reimbursement under the dual enrollment statute for these classes, but that we want more. And I understand you want more, but we're still only funding dual enrollment courses at 30% of the statutory amount. And if we actually fully funded dual enrollment, you'd have more than enough money to do this. And Waconia could do it, and Worthington could do it, and Wabasso could do it, and Warroad could do it, and instead of having one pilot, and you folks may do great stuff here, but one is not a pilot. One is a spit. One is a little, you know, something in the pocket because we like you. A pilot is a half a dozen sites across the state that can then get together in 2 years and say, what worked for you, what didn't work for me, and what are the lessons learned? I think I'd rather see us actually build opportunities across the state by fully funding PSEO or dual enrollment. And Representative Nash, I gave the same speech yesterday. Nothing personal.
Big shoulders.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Representative Slocum, that last question then.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I love it when the ed biz has to rotate a little bit and come back to vocational ed. It makes me ecstatically happy. I have long supported vocational ed, as Representative Nash knows. And the ed biz is very cyclical, accent on sick. It goes in a circle, and it always owns back to something that we've already done. This is wonderful. I want Bloomington that did it because they saw a need and just did it. Yeah. I'd like them to have $250,000. And Richfield is not far behind. They need that too. So I do agree with Representative Dabney about expanding, but I love this. And kids, you know, for years, all we could talk about is kids have to go to four-year college. That is just not the case. Never has been, never will be. And this addresses that in a really positive way. It gives kids an opportunity to learn a marketable living wage skill. Yay. Thank you.
All right, Representative Nash,
yep.
Comments and then final.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. As I said when I first began, there's a lot of people both in my district and one kid that is related to me, he's my son, that has said, I didn't see a way for me to enter the job program that I wanted to. My son, Representative Dabney, you came in late. My son is a hospital corpsman in the Navy right now. He didn't see anything at 110 that could give him that on-ramp, so he went and took care of it himself. But he said, Dad, there was nothing that existed for me to be exposed to that, nothing. I went to high school with a kid that took every shop class available, and we all wondered, what are you doing with your life? He now owns a multi-million-dollar earth-moving company. And like Representative Slocum said, we've got to get kids introduced to this. I took tours during the interim in my district, and every single one of them said the same thing. I can't hire enough people. I can't find access to kids, even though they want to learn. Help us. So here we are, and I'm trying my level best. And Representative Marquardt, I'd be happy to merge schools back together. And Representative Dabney, if we could give them all a pile of money, that's great. I tried that last year, and it didn't work. So here we are. We're trying to pare it back to do something that we can all learn from and point to and say, here's what worked, here's what didn't work. And with that, Madam Chair, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Representative Nash. The chair lays over House File 1944 as amended for possible inclusion or further action at a later date. And Representative Haley is up.
Madam Chair,
Representative Erickson,
before we begin Representative Haley's bill, could we have Mr. Strom look up what we did last year in the omnibus bill for Senator Weber? And, you know, I'm just wondering, can we amend this tails that he had, which was a huge amount? And would that be applicable to any of these programs? Just not right now, but if you would let us know sometime before the end of this meeting. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Mr. Strom will work on that while we move on. Great. So, Representative Haley, we are hearing your bill informationally, but I understand your bill is being introduced, so when we have session later today, you should have a bill number. So that's why it's informational only at this point in time. So,
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Would you like me to start?
Yes, Madam please Chair? Go ahead. Okay. Thank you.
As the chair said, we will have a bill number later today. Thank you for the opportunity just to present this topic. Just on a higher level, I am very interested in workforce and all the things that you've been talking about in the committee today and how do we connect kids with opportunities. I have great relationships in my district with my superintendents. There's about six of them that are up here today at the Capitol. And as I talk to them and talk to my post-secondary institution, Minnesota State Southeast, we're trying to identify what are some of the gaps in providing these programs and giving these kids skill opportunities. And one of the gaps I've come up with is just the sheer lack of funds for equipment. As you all know, a lot of our technical classes, our shop classes, have declined in the past decades, and a lot of schools have gotten rid of the CNC machines and the welding machines and even are lacking computers in a lot of cases. I was able to find what could be a possible solution and just want to present that today for discussion, and I hope to do some more work on this through the session and through the summer. The bill talks about the Department of Administration's surplus services. There is a federal agency of surplus services and also state agency. And to give you some background, any federal contractor, let's take Lockheed Martin, when they apply for a federal contract and they're working on a project, any of the goods that they have purchased for that project, if they're not used under that contract, those supplies are surplus, and they fall into the surplus services agencies. And there are warehouses of these surplus goods all over the United States. States also have surplus warehouses. This can contain everything from helicopters, automobiles, to computers, filing cabinets, supplies of aluminum, and et cetera. There's a process that school districts and cities and post-secondary institutions can go through to procure this equipment. This at our state level, it happens through the Department of Admin, through the Surplus Services Agency. The challenge that I found is there are fees to do that, and sometimes those fees in the process provide a barrier for a school to get something. I want to give you just two examples, and then I'll ask for some short testimony. Minnesota State Southeast has a campus in Red Wing and Winona. And the dean of technology and trades happens to come from the military, so he has some connections. And this week he will get delivery of 10,000 line items totaling 571,000 pieces valued at $420,999 from Lockheed Martin for free. That's through the federal surplus agency, and this will include steel, aluminum, titanium, fasteners, and other high-value consumables that he will use across the vocational system in Red Wing and Winona for the CNC program, the welding program, the auto body program, etc. Remarkable. Think of the opportunities that would exist for our K-12 and our post-secondary system if we could iron out some barriers to access some of this equipment. That is what my bill is about, and I just wanted to, if I can turn it over to my testifiers, Madam Chair, and they would give some examples of the need in the K-12 system.
Yes, very well. Welcome, gentlemen, and if each of you would just state your name and who you represent before you begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the community or committee. Mike Harvey, Superintendent Zambrona, is at the schools, and we really like what Representative Haley is talking about here. We have worked really hard in our schools to come up with funding to supply our kids in our schools with cutting-edge materials, equipment. That's not easy to do. I remember just a couple years ago, we're trying to acquire a plasma cam. It took a lot of fundraising, grant writing, and that was just one piece of equipment. We have great connection with our local industries who help us supply us with some of these materials. They're very generous to us, but to have access to even more of these resources that are just excess from the government, from the contracts that have taken place, cutting-edge equipment. You know, one CNC machine, it's tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, EDM machines, more high-tech plasma cams, just cutting-edge materials for electronics. Anything that we have that we can get our hands on would be extremely important so that we can outfit our vocational schools, because we're working with Southeast to really look at partnering with them, which has been talked about. But they need supplies as well. They need equipment. We need equipment. And if we can have that equipment in both sites so we can continue with that training, it'd be very beneficial.
Welcome.
Madam Chair and committee members, I'm Mike Rudman. I'm the superintendent of the Goodhue Schools. And when Representative Haley first introduced this bill to me, you know, I wasn't aware of this surplus system, and I'm not saying that to show my incompetence in any way, but I think that's one of the concerns that her legislation will address. We're certainly aware of a lot of other public surplus opportunities, but as folks have already said, there are large needs in this area. We're always looking in K-12 schools for tools and materials to support learning, and especially career and technical learning. I find it, I think it would be very valuable to expand access through better information of this particular process and then also to lower the fees. And on behalf of myself and other superintendents in my area, I'm here to offer my strong support and gratitude to Representative Haley for introducing this piece of legislation and look forward to seeing where it might head. So thank you.
All right, thank you. And then I think we did have someone from the Department of Administration who wished to testify. Welcome, and if you'd please just state your name for the record.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I am Alice Roberts Davis. I am Assistant Commissioner with the Department of Administration, responsible for property and procurement.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Roberts-Davis.
Thank you for this opportunity to be here to highlight the federal surplus program. Also, thank you, Representative Haley, for giving a great overview of what the program actually does, so I won't go into that again. But what I did want to share with you today is that the federal surplus program is run in accordance with the very prescriptive policies that are outlined by the General Services Administration Reutilization, Transfer, and Donation Program, or GSA. We're concerned that this bill's approach would be in conflict with those federal policies as it would give favor to educational institutions and other local governmental institutions or nonprofit. For example, GSA policies include ensuring that there is equitable distribution of surplus property and allowing preferential treatment to school districts in Minnesota, state colleges, and universities by waiving the fees associated with that would be considered fair and inequitable. They would be getting a preference over public hospitals, local law enforcement, or local volunteer fire departments, and we don't believe that that is something that would be in line with the policies of the GSA. It's important to note that the federal surplus program is not a profit center to the state. It is at best a break-even operation, and more often than not, we lose money with this program. However, it does offer the opportunity for government and nonprofits to acquire useful goods at greatly reduced prices. The fees assessed help us recoup the costs associated with administering the program, including transportation and shipping of the items and goods that we are supplying. It allows for staff time for sourcing the items and inventorying them upon receipt, for storage of those items, and then also compliance after the items have been distributed. Should this bill move forward, we believe that it would require an amendment to the state plan that would need to be ratified first by the legislature in 2019, and then it would need to be second ratified by the federal government. And during that time, while that's happening, we believe that we would be at risk of having our ability to purchase or to acquire goods for the program suspended. We would look forward to, as you suggested, continue to work on this together. I'd stand for any questions if there are questions about the property, about the program, or the department administration's position.
Thank you very much, Ms. Roberts-Davis. We appreciate your being here. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on this bill or on this informational hearing, since we don't have a bill just yet? All right. Any member questions? Mr. Heller, do you have something to comment on surplus property?
On the XXXX bill.
All right. Come forward if you have comments on this particular use of surplus property by schools.
My name is Rick Heller. I officially represent the twice exceptional people with print disabilities. This committee is breaking ADA, XXXX file, go to Data Practice Commission 2016 on the Heller handouts. Jason specifically said, unless the bill gets introduced on the floor, it does become fully accessible. That's all I have to say.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Heller. Any questions from committee members? All right, not seeing any. Representative Haley, I think it's a really innovative idea. Could you, the figure you quoted on the amount of surplus property, could you do that, just refresh me on that figure?
The example from my technical college?
Yes.
It was valued at over $420,000.
Wow.
In steel, aluminum, titanium, and other equipment to use for their CNC and welding and auto body programs, et cetera. And it was from Lockheed Martin.
That's a significant amount of materials. So, all right. Well, again, I think it's a really innovative idea. I'm glad we had a chance to hear about it today. Anything else you'd like to share with the committee about the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would encourage you to talk to your school districts. Ask if they're familiar with the program. I mean, it exists today. They can go online, and the department would help them get signed up, and they could get used to seeing if there's equipment that they could procure. And I'm very interested in your feedback. As I said, I would like to work on this and figure out a way that we can make this better. We know our schools need the equipment, and we know there's the never enough funds for what they need, and time is of the essence. So I would appreciate any insight that all of you could share. Thank you very much for the informational hearing.
And thank you, Representative Haley. And I think, yeah, this sounds like something it is worth pursuing, and it sounds like the Department of Administration be willing to continue talking with us to make sure we can find a way to try to make this a possibility, but obviously we've got to meet federal and state requirements. So thank you. Thank you to your testifiers. We appreciate you being here. All right, Representative Peterson. Let's see. And Representative Peterson moves that House File 4214. Oh, wait. This is information only because we don't have the bill. All right. Never mind. So we are just going to hear informationally 4214, and you are the author, Representative Peterson. So why don't you tell us about your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 4214 is a bill that allows transportation for pregnant and parenting teens in school districts who have academic education, parenting programs, and child care as part of their educational day. And I just wanted to make a couple comments. First of all, thank you, Representative Dabney, for co-authoring the bill. And then currently there are 253 students that are involved in these types of programs across six school districts. And the fiscal note that you received equates to $3,616 per student for fiscal year 20 and $4,383 per student in fiscal year 21. And I guess I would suggest that we probably give them a new car instead of providing public transportation with those types of dollars. But that's my comment for that. And from there, Madam Chair, I'll move on to testifiers.
All right, very good. Well, we're open to all creative ideas on that promise. welcome to your testifiers, whoever wants to kick off. Please do so, and just please introduce yourself for the record so we have that on the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Darren Kermis. I am the superintendent of Southwest Metro Intermediate District 288. With me today are two of our students from a program that goes by the name of New Beginnings. And I don't want to steal their thunder, but I do think they would like the car. Instead of the car, though, I would like to share with you a little bit about the program and the intent here. And at the end, I'd like to address the fiscal note that was provided to the Senate, because I am working with Mr. Uni, with Ms. Larson in finance. We are already working to address the inaccuracies in that fiscal note. It is, I believe, overstated by about 75%. So I'm sorry about the car, but with that, the United States Centers for Disease Control reports that 25% of girls in America will become pregnant at least once by age 20. In Minnesota in 2015, there were 3,161 pregnancies among Minnesota teens between the ages of 15 and 19. Sadly, while the graduation rate in Minnesota is generally reported to be over 80%, research suggests that only 50% of teen mothers will receive a high school diploma or GED by age 22, with over 60% dropping out of high school. One program bucking this trend is located in Minnesota and is run by Southwest Metro Intermediate School District. The New Beginnings program for pregnant and parenting teens has been in existence since 1980. During that time, it has served well over 2,500 students with an average on-time graduation rate of nearly 80%. While nearly 20% of teen moms nationally experience developmental delays with their children, only 7% of the children of teen mothers who have had access to New Beginnings programming during their pregnancy experience similar developmental delays. This program succeeds because it combines quality academic instruction with parenting education and high-quality on-site childcare. Unfortunately, this program is not fully realizing its mission due to the inability of many pregnant and parenting teens to be able to get to the program. This bill will serve to allow school districts to provide transportation to students attending a program such as New Beginnings in the same manner as it provides transportation for students attending a care and treatment or special ed program. Please note that the language in this bill retains local control and leaves the ultimate decision in terms of transportation to the local school district by stating that a school district may provide this form of transportation. Also, please note that only programs that provide all three of the following services to students qualify. I liken this to a three-legged stool. One leg is academics. The program has to have high-quality, rigorous academics. Otherwise, what are we here for? The second leg is on-site, high-quality child care. There are many programs that provide academics and maybe parenting ed, but not the child care. Without it, the program falls. And the third is parenting ed, and I'm talking about a legitimate course in parenting ed and prenatal education that is credit-bearing, not just a one-hour-a-week kind of community ed parenting class for teens. In the absence of any one of those three legs, it fails. And it's our belief that there are only five and possibly six programs in the entire state of Minnesota that meet that high rigorous standard. So those are the programs we're talking about. Where this came up, I want to give you a concrete example from New Prague. New Prague, at the time, was a member of the Carver Scott Educational Co-op, which has become Southwest Metro Intermediate. New Prague had a small bus going from New Prague to Chaska with three students on it who are accessing special ed programs in Chaska. There were many extra seats on the bus. New Prague had two pregnant teen girls who wanted to go to the New Beginnings program located in Chaska. New Prague said, well, we've got a bus sitting here. We're not going to go to your house, but if you can get to New Prague High School, you can hop on the bus and go there. These two girls both went. They attended the program. They graduated on time. The following summer, there was an audit done by MDE, and the statute that's proposed to be amended here was brought to play, and it said, well, you would have gotten your full funding for that bus had you left it with the three kids with disabilities. Because you used those empty seats for two kids who didn't have disabilities, they took away 40% of the funding for that bus route. It's nonsensical. But in talking to Dr. Melcher, I conceded that he was absolutely right. That is what the statute calls for. Our desire here is not to provide a car, is not to provide this expensive program. It is simply to allow a district to make a common sense decision and put kids on a bus with empty seats so you're not losing money on it. That's what it's about. And that's where the fiscal note goes terribly awry, because it doesn't understand the intent of the program or how it works. I can go on and on. I have so far, I'm just a little concerned about the fiscal note and a little passionate about the program for these girls. So far, I have come up with 22 flaws with that fiscal note that account to three-quarters of its estimated cost. So that will be continued to be worked on. And it will get to a reasonable level. Otherwise, I would not have embarrassed Representative Pearson, Mr. Dabney, by bringing forward something, because it's just ridiculous the amount that's in that bill. With that said, I would love to have you hear from a couple of our students who can tell you much more eloquently than I can about this program.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Kermis. So that's a pretty radical idea that we would use common sense in some of our statutes, but we'll give it a try. Well, that's what we're here for. So welcome to our students. We're really, really glad to have you here. And whoever wants to go first, go ahead and just try to speak up into the microphone so we can hear you and tell us your name.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I am Alicia Villa Perez from Shakopee. I have a one-year-old named Diego, and I have been a student at the New Beginnings program since 2016. New Beginnings is an alternative high school for pregnant and parenting teens. Thanks to the support I was able to get through New Beginnings, I will earn my high school diploma this spring, and I have also had education about prenatal health and parenting. We spend the first 45 minutes of each day in a parenting-child interaction class, and the next hour each day we have a parent education and child development class. Without transportation to the New Beginnings program, I would not be earning my high school diploma or be as confident as I am in my parenting skills. I feel bad for other girls who are raising children but are unable to get to a program like New Beginnings. I have a good future as I plan to go to college and become a nurse. I would like to see other parent teens have the same opportunities that I have had, and thank you for having me here.
Thank you very much. We very much appreciate you being here, and congratulations on Diego. Welcome.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to speak today. My name is Brianna Serrano Sanchez. I'm from Shakopee. I have a 2-year-old daughter. Her name is Elena. I have been attending New Beginnings since 2015, and I'll also be graduating this spring. I'm grateful that there was transportation to bring my daughter and me to school every day. While I am taking my academic classes and learning about about child development, I know my daughter is being cared for in a safe, nurturing child care, which is on site at her school. This is critical for us to be able to succeed. Elena can be learning and having fun with other children, eating healthy snacks and meals, and I can be a teen and go to school for 6 hours a day and 5 days a week. Students at New Beginnings also have access to county public health, mental health, and social workers as needed. I know there are girls and their children who are unable to get transportation to our school because their school districts don't approve it. The moms feel isolated, and they stress about having to find a ride to school every day and thinking about all the things that they'll miss in class and whether they will graduate or not. They don't learn parenting skills, and their children miss out on a chance to be in a developmentally appropriate setting where they will have a much better chance for a good start in school and in life. Thank you for considering this important bill.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Sanchez. And I'm sure Elena does very well while you're in school. And so to either of you, do you want to share with us any of your plans? You're both going to be graduating this spring. Plans afterwards?
Well, I'm planning to go to Hennepin Tech, which is close to my school that I go to now. And I'm planning to keep my son Diego in the childcare he has been since he was 8 weeks old. And I trust all the teachers there. So he's going to be there, and I'm going to be in contact with New Beginnings. And I'm so thankful that they have been supporting me and my child.
So they'll be able to continue supporting you as you start. All right, that's wonderful. Really good. How about you, Ms. Sanchez?
I plan to work for a while and then maybe go to college, but my plan is just to work right now.
Excellent. Very good. Well, thank you both for being here, and clearly the program has been beneficial. You can tell from your testimony and the smiles on your faces, so thank you for being here. Do we have any other testifiers on 4214, which we are hearing informationally? All right, any questions from committee members? Oh, Representative Sanchez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not really sure who this question is for, but do we have any idea how many programs like New Horizons exist within our school districts that they have all of the components like the academics, the parenting instruction, and the on-site child care? And then I'm going to ask even more specific, do we have things like that in rural districts?
A good question, and I don't know if Nonpartisan knows or Mr. Kermes, if you know. I think you said 6 programs in the state, if I heard you correctly.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative. The under the definition and the bill that you have, there's an amendment that even clarifies a little further and creates the rigor necessary here, but to have a full on-site child care, the highly accredited level child care, available to all infants and toddlers of all of the students, and to have at least 4 hours a week of parenting education or prenatal education in an academic setting. While there are roughly 18 total programs across the state that do have some of those in some level, there are only 5 and possibly a 6th, depending upon how you cut it, and they are located in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Anoka, Hennepin, Intermediate 287, Intermediate 288, so they're mostly clustered in the metro, in answer to your second question, that fully meet all of the standards here. Now, that being said, it is possible, and for some of the other programs, and some of the others are located across the state. For example, I'm aware of one in Brainerd, Rochester, they are spread across more. Northfield has one with a small number. There are a handful of other programs across the rest of the state, but they currently wouldn't meet this threshold.
Representative Sanchez.
Thank you. And then just one quick last question. To be considered highly qualified, is that a parent aware rated, Mr. Program?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes.
Other questions? All right. Representative Peterson, any final comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for members, for your support of this bill moving forward, and thank you for having an informational hearing. I think there is a bill, a clone bill, in your possession, so we will, after today.
Okay.
And thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you very much to our testifiers. Thank you to the two young students who were here. We really, really appreciate you taking time to be here, so thank you. All right. Representative Tice. And we do have possession of this bill, so I'm Representative Tice moves House File 3119. It be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means, but it is the Chair's intention today to lay it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill or further action at a later time. And this is with regards to the Sun A Foundation. So welcome to your committee, Representative Tice, and welcome, Mr. Sun A.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm just going to turn it right over to Tony so that he can tell you how great the program is.
Okay. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I really want to thank you, first of all, for trusting me over the last 2 years in funding our program, trusting me to support our children, which are our most valuable resource. It is really important. I've also heard a lot of great things on testimony so far today. The most meaningful thing I heard was common sense, and that's a practice that we try to follow. Through your funding over the last 2 years, we've been able to hire nearly 100 new jobs. We've expanded programming in St. Cloud, Minneapolis, and Rochester, and St. Paul school districts. We built positive outcomes in social-emotional behavior, which is really encouraging a child's will to want to learn so they take it upon themselves to be successful. We've increased academic performance. We've also, as we heard earlier, we've met with the chamber in St. Cloud with Representative Tice and worked on career explorations because not all of our students wanted to go to college, so we've implemented that. We've also worked on school safety, which is a hot topic now. Our data shows that we have improved climate and culture, and we have more adults in schools, which statistically says that our schools are safer for the kids, for the students that go to them. And the results that we have is sort of staggering. In new schools that we go to, we always see a 50% decrease in referrals and suspensions. Last year when we expanded to St. Cloud, we saw a 54% decrease. This year so far in the Rochester School District, it's at 74% decrease. And this is not data that we have. This is the data that the school district gives to us for the students that we're working with. We've also tried to be more efficient and use common sense. And that means training our staff to become future teachers. We know that there's a huge shortage of teachers and all kinds of labor workforce. So we've actually partnered with St. Mary's, and we'll have our first cohort. Last year we piloted the program where through training they got master's degree credits to get their teacher's license. This summer we have our first full cohort of ELL and special education. So in a 24-month period while working with us, you will be able to get your master's degree and your teaching license and preferential hiring among those districts. So we see the cost benefit of this program really helping. We know money is short, so we're trying to tackle school safety, social emotional outcomes, academic support, career explorations, and also the shortage of our workforce, which would be future teachers. So I guess that about wraps it up. I know that I've been here before, and I really just wanted to thank you and let you know that we're doing what we promise with your funding. We're not only are we growing the program, but we are improving it as well. And so thank you for giving us this opportunity today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sane. We appreciate you being here. Was there anyone else who wanted to testify on House File 3119? All right, not seeing any questions from committee members. Mr. Sane, could you talk to us a little bit more about this, your partnership with St. Mary's and sort of the grow your own almost program that you have? I think you've had a couple of your mentor, I don't know, what do you call them?
Coaches.
Thank you, that testified last year. And could you tell us how many are maybe part of that program and how that's attractive to your coaches, and how many do you think you'll be able to get into that program and maybe into the field of teaching or as licensed teachers?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So over the last 2 years, we've had 15 of our staff members be employed by the school district in various jobs. And then it dawned on to me that people were also quitting because they realized that teaching was an awesome profession. They were really good at it, and the training we were giving them was oftentimes master's level classes to begin with, so they knew they could be successful. So we partnered with St. Mary's to make it more intentional. Last year we piloted the program to see if they gave us their training, what we'd have to do to fulfill the requirements to get credit for it, to do the homework, and it was very positive. And so we sat down with them, and we asked St. Mary's, what does somebody need to do to get their license and to become a teacher? It's about 60 credits. We've adapted our program to allow our training times to be master's level programs because some of the same skills, well, they're all the same skills to be able to work in school as a teacher, and plus the other training we give, hopefully will be well-rounded teachers of the future that have more experience, I guess, in the classroom before they actually start their teaching job. So our goal is to have 22 for our cohort starting this June. Some of it does depend on funding. At a minimum, we will have one cohort in ELL, but we're hoping to have a cohort in ELL and special ed.
Excellent. Thank you. Any other questions? All right, I guess you've wowed them. Thank you very much. Representative Tice, any other comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just love this program, and I'm going to fight like heck to keep it in my community. The program that's probably the one that I value the most is at McKinley ALC, and they have seen such a significant difference there. They're doing a lot of different things at ALC, but having the coaches there has been probably the best thing they've ever seen. So thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. And with that, renew my motion, but again, announce the intention to lay the bill over for today. So thank you very much, and thank you, Mr. Sonnes. Keep doing good work. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
All right, so those are our bills for today. I had announced earlier we would try to take testimony on 3315 to finish that up. So, but I'd like to end a little bit early today. So I know that we've got a couple of other meetings going on before we have session, otherwise members are going to be here very late. So if anybody would like to testify that didn't on 3315, I don't have my list in front of me. We're going to go about 10 minutes or so, and we'll see if we can get some of that in. Yeah, go on. Just come on down. Like I said, I don't have my list. I left it in my office that had signed up, and we'll get through as much of that as we can, or maybe all of it. So, Mr. Amoroso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Gary Amoroso, Executive Director, Minnesota Solicitor and School Administrators. I'll be very brief. I want to thank Chair Erickson and her committee for the work that they've done on the policy bill this year. We're very excited about the opportunity to take a nice hard look at special education and not only look at funding but also look at what are the variables, what are the components, what are the factors that drive that entire system. And hope that through that effort we'll be able to come back in 2019 with some solutions very similar to what we saw when we had the conversation about teacher licensure. We're also thankful for the conversation about trying to create a little bit more synergy between ESSA and the world's best workforce. Anything we can do to try and meld those conversations I think is beneficial and we create a more efficient operation for our school districts. I need to share a couple of concerns. One is the potential school rating system. I think all of you know that we had the U.S. Department of Education approve our ESSA plan, which does include an accountability system. From our perspective and in talking to our members, there's some concern about having a dual system where you'll have one set of criteria that will create and produce, I'll call it a product or a result, And with this system, you're going to have another set of criteria potentially that will create another product or another endpoint, and that could be confusing. And we believe that we'd at least like to see an opportunity to have the ESSA-approved plan put into operation. Let's see what it's like after a few years And if we're not satisfied as a state that it's providing transparent, clear information for parents, then I think that would be a better time to have the conversation. I also have to bring up, and I'm a former social studies teacher, and this isn't the biggest thing in the world, but the whole conversation about civics, it keeps coming back. And I've talked to Representative Erdahl about this as recently as yesterday. The only concern we have, and as I mentioned, I'm a former social studies teacher, is that when you put this requirement in, it has the potential to create either less activity within another social studies area if a district chooses to go in that direction, or if a district chooses to increase the social studies credits, then you've got the potential to reduce elective opportunities for students. If the challenge is we're not believing that our students are being exposed enough to the whole civics conversation, we already have those within our realm. Let's look at the standards and see if we could correct it that way versus creating another course. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Amoroso.
Welcome. Madam Chair, members, Josh Down of Minneapolis Public Schools. I'll just touch on four items. I wanted to thank the chair for putting in the homeless transportation component in Articles 2, Section 1. Really help create that continuity for those students while their parents perhaps are moving around. Article 4, Section 1, the special ed working group, certainly support that. Having staffed those in the past, having served on those, and having watched many of them, I really do like the model of a legislative working group where I think you get a lot of buy-in from legislators. So that's my preference, but obviously excited to see that move forward. I have two concerns. One relates to some of the issues around the audit trail pieces that are required for student data systems. And I had the opportunity to work with student data systems for 14 years. And there are certain issues around when data is accessed and what it appears like on the screen. So if you have aggregate data on a screen, it's very difficult to determine which student you're referencing. So would like to work with you on kind of working on that piece. And then the last piece relates to the star rating system. And members, I'd specifically point to line 29.31 related to the academic growth rates. And this is the part of the bill I have the most concern about, because it says, for example, if you have a student in fourth grade and that student takes the MCA in math, you then compare the proficiency of the same cohort of kids in fifth grade taking the MCA. So you have essentially two cohorts of kids. But what we as a state have never done is vertically align those two tests. So what that means in real world, you have to be in the top half of students nationally to be proficient on the fourth grade math test. You have to be in the top third of students nationally to be proficient on the fifth grade math test. So in looking at that, I went and looked at a few schools, and Westwood Elementary in Representative Tice's district had a passage rate or a proficiency rate of 60.5 for those fourth grade students. Those same cohort of students the next year in fifth grade had a proficiency rate of 39.2. The exceed, and as you know, there's the exceeds, meets, partially, and then does not. The exceeds went down by two-thirds. So when we compare, you have two valid sets of data, MCAs at fourth grade, MCAs at fifth grade. Comparing them is what is the invalid piece of this. So I fear that we are setting up a system that was never intended to do that cross-test comparison in this way. And so, you know, would like to see that change, Madam Chair. And many other comments, but I'll save them for later. Thank you very much.
And, well, just a quick question for you, Mr. Dunham. And we're actually maybe for nonpartisan staff. I'll defer to them. The cut scores for those are established by the department, right, or by the testing committees that develop the MCAs?
Madam Chair, I believe that's correct.
Okay. So maybe that's an issue for discussion.
Absolutely, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Kelleher.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. Grace Kelleher with the Minnesota School Boards Association, and we do have a significant number of concerns with this, but I'm going to start with what we support. We really support the Special Education Working Group, and we heard it in yesterday's testimony. We need to find a way to figure out special ed costs, and they're just, even at the local school district level, they distort what we spend there and how it looks to teachers and other folks in our community. So it will fill a crucial need that we've been asking for, so we really appreciate that piece. Saying that, we have concerns. We have concerns with the curriculum mandates. There's a substance abuse in grades 5, 6, 8, 10, 12 grades, and it's on page 8.15. We've got concerns with the one credit of civics in graduation standards in 11th and 12th grade. Because of the limitations, if you look, both those items have 12th grade in them, and by pushing some of these requirements into 12th grade, when we're trying to encourage kids to go into PSEO, that's problematic going forward. So we ask you to consider that. We're concerned about the dyslexia screening, which would require school districts to screen all K kindergarten kids up to second grade and second through 12 if the student is exhibiting characteristics. This is basically what we consider a classroom mandate and an inefficient way to screen children. There is no follow-through with parents, social workers, principals, so if, in fact, we do think something might be going on, what's the next step? Do we contact parents? Where do we go with it? We're concerned about the star rating, and I think the testifiers in front of us mentioned that. We're trying to integrate the world's best workforce and asset together, and this just adds yet another accountability measure. So we'd like some clarity on what we're working for and where you'd like us to go on that. We are concerned that to our performance reports on student achievement, we will add how well the children do on the federal civics test, where they have to answer more 30 out of 50 questions. The test is not correlated with our social studies curriculum standards or is tested for bias. So we're concerned about both those items there. The Patriotic Society access to schools, this was a bill we did not discuss in committee and we have some concerns on. Basically, 60 days prior to the start of school, we could receive a request from one of these organizations, and they would have, in writing, have time, 30 minutes for instructional time. And I just want to share, I printed out the list of who's on this in the federal standards. There's the Catholic War Veterans of the United States of America would be part, Daughters of Union Veterans of the Civil War, the Help America Vote Foundation, the National Council on Radiation Protection and Measurements, and the Ladies of the Grand Army of the Republic. So I encourage you to take a look at all those names. And going on the consent program on 34.3 mandates schools to develop and implement a consent program to prevent and reduce sexual assault for grades 8th through 12th grade, and you notice we're back into 12th grade where we're teaching yet another subject in there. There's no parental opt-out for parents, and we've asked for a local fiscal impact note on what this would cost school districts going forward. The non-exclusionary discipline policy and practices on 34.21 has new mandates, new reporting requirements, and processes for discipline in schools. We've asked our attorneys to review this, but I want you to think about those non-exclusionary discipline policies and then yesterday's threat assessment bill. It feels like we're sort of being pulled apart on both sides of those issues, where we should be more active looking for threats, at the same time try to use positive reinforcement with kids and you know, give them a chance to not to succeed. So it's behavior issues become a huge issue for school districts. The student data privacy requirements here on 66.11, we're worried about the audit logs, and especially we had a speaker from Little Falls, and he really went into it. The teacher went in and changed their grade book She probably looks at everybody in her class to do that, and there's notification requirements, and those are some of the logs we have to keep going forward, and I thought that was extremely persuasive testimony. Additionally, a huge issue for student data practices is on 66.1 is the opt-out for parents in one-to-one or technology instruction. And our question would be, what do we want to do? What should we do next? So if they opt out, is it the thought that we would provide them with a textbook? We need some clarity on what is the next step. If you want to do this, help us figure out how you'd like us to respond to that request going forward. And lastly, there is a significant local cost to school districts in the language and the respectful meals policy. It prohibits the school district from limiting student participation or collection of fees for any school program, and that's on 70.13. I asked my local school district what that might run, and they thought it might run $4.3 million. That's Rosemont-Eagan Apple Valley School District. I reached out to try to find some state information, and Mr. Strom was helpful. But statewide, they think it's about $67 million of cost, and that's without doing anything different for lunch. So we're talking substantial cost to school districts going forward. With that, Madam Chairman, I'd be happy to take questions.
Thank you, Ms. Kelleher. That's a lot. But Representative Scott has raised her hand a couple times.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to address a couple things in the student data privacy bill portion of the omnibus. And I know Representative Lucero wasn't here, but one of the questions raised before, and Ms. Kelleher brought it up too, is the audit trail. And the audit trail information, that the section in the bill states that if you don't have the technology that keeps track, that can automatically do the audit trail for you now, my understanding is that your grandfather didn't, in essence, you don't have to do that. As far as opting a child out of an online curriculum, I still maintain that parents are the best deciders of what their children should be learning, and if the parent wants to opt a child out of this, then if the child can read a book, a textbook, whatever the teacher and the parent decide together would be the best course of action. And on one hand, I heard Ms. Kelleher talk about an opt-out for students that don't want to be where their parents may not want them to be in on another section of the bill that we're offering. I think it has to do with making them aware of sexual exploitation and that sort of thing. So whatever you would do during that period of time, if those children are opted out, and I know in the past people have been able to opt out their children from sex ed and other things. So whatever you're doing during that opt-out period, when those kids are opting out, then it seems to me that it wouldn't be that hard to figure out what to do with them in the case of a particular curriculum and give it to them on paper, ask the parent, work with the parent. I know that most teachers are willing to do that. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Keller, did you want to say anything? Otherwise, I'll go to Representative Sandstead.
Madam Chairman, I'll just respond quickly. We do believe parents are wonderful guides to how they want their children. We have utmost respect for them, and their involvement in the process makes students stronger. I think we're looking in the consent program as more consenting and being able to share your body and where you want to go. That's more of a health-type curriculum where an opt-out, people might just not want to have that curriculum for their children. I think our other concern is that if it's math or it's reading, those are still subjects we have to provide, and it's just a different bar. You simply can't not take it. But with the health curriculum and those opt-outs, that's what it really means. So I appreciate your insight on that.
Representative Sandstead.
I think you may have answered just one of the questions. Thank you. I would like to just talk a little bit about your concerns over the dyslexia mandate. If you feel that this is a mandate being put on the schools, do you have anything you can offer to us as solutions? One of the conversations that we've had here is the concern over the cost of special ed and looking at ways of determining whether those costs are necessary or is there a way we can reduce those costs. In my experience, I think that many students that I've seen over the course of my career fall somewhere on the spectrum with dyslexia, but they haven't been diagnosed. They haven't been identified as that, and so they end up in the special ed basket, if you will, you know, falling under that umbrella instead of receiving maybe targeted services. If we don't do the screening, the early screening of all of our students, how do we target that need? And I understand, you know, the schools aren't going to be the complete solution, that there has to be something there, but if we can't even on the front line identify them, How do we get them to the next step of targeted services? How do we keep them from falling under the special ed umbrella and running those costs up?
Ms. Kelleher.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Sandstead. I appreciate your insight just as an active teacher going forward. We're concerned, A, about getting all our teachers up and going, so somehow they call it a screening in the bill, but I don't. I mean, normally when we screen children, if you think about it, how we do early childhood screenings, if you've been involved with that, we have actually sort of an expert there, a hearing expert that's testing our children. And I think this piece would talk about something in between that and where we are about being able to diagnose those very early signs of dyslexia and in K through 2 for all our children. Our concern is that really it doesn't showcase itself necessarily really well in those very early years going forward, and that just training our staff in you know, what level of knowledge they have to have, how do we go out and get this, and this is effective for 2019. And so I think that's the piece going forward that we're looking at and how to do it better.
Representative Sandstead. Thank you. On that issue, that was some of the same concerns I had over it, that it was only the way the language was written, only I think it was Tier 3 and 4 who had to have the ongoing training for that tier licensure, not the 1 and 2. And my concern is if it's good for kids, it doesn't matter what tier you're at. It should be for all of our students and all of our teachers. Is there a way that this can be done with the 2% set aside for in-services or something like that at the beginning of the year where, you know, at least the entire staff or those that are working with the kids can have the exposure and some education around this, at least in the interim, until we come up with the perfect solution?
Ms. Keller.
Madam Chairman, Representative Sands, that the 2% set aside, usually most school districts go through easily, and certainly with new requirements, we're going to use more than that to get our staff up to speed. I think we just, you know, we just want to make sure that our staffs are available to do what's recommended in law, that we meet that need. And I think dyslexia is the newest thing we struggle with locally on how to support our children and our parents going forward. So we've got one person at the department right now, and somehow she's supposed to transform the entire state landscape. And I think that's the other thing we struggle with is we know she's got the qualifications. She has an expertise in there. But that's still one person. And that's enough. I mean, she's wonderful, but that's an awful lot to ask.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Ms. Keller. Who else wishes to testify? Okay. We are going to end at 2:30 because I have to be at another meeting at that time. So if you could limit your comments to something that hasn't been raised yet, just to make sure we cover that. And please introduce yourself.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Roger Arntzen, and I represent the Elementary and Secondary Principals Associations. Just a couple things. I do want to say we want to thank the Policy Committee and Representative Erickson for a lot of the stuff that's in here. You're talking about Representative Lucero's policy bill. Several changes were made that we think made this much better and that will work very, very well in school, and we support those relative to safety and security for kids in that. We are very supportive of the disciplinary provisions in here, particularly in the non-exclusionary discipline. That's going to make a big difference for us. We have a little bit of a question on working out with the lunch language on shaming, and just for clarification purposes, and I think we'll talk to staff about this as it goes on. I would just have to mention that the elementary principals are keenly interested in the dyslexia issue, I think, for some of the reasons that Representative Sandstead raised in her questions. This is an ongoing deal for us, and I think if you Googled it and looked it up, you would see that it's not like having an eye exam that says your vision is 2040. There's a long spectrum on this, and I think what elementary principals say is that there are a lot of reasons that kids read below grade level. This is one of them, but we need a large group of interventions as and how we can handle them. I think the complexity of this that they would tell you is some of the analysis or screening things say, so use this particular curriculum. And I think that makes people uncomfortable if there's a mandate and then we're limited into some specific curricula on this. So that and that's kind of the concern, but I think the goal, as Representative Sanchez said, and all of you would say, is we want to make sure that these kids do well in school. So, Madam Chair, I thank the opportunity to visit here in a short time.
Thank you. Ms. Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and I can be brief. I just wanted to touch a little bit on...
Please introduce yourself.
I'm sorry. Valerie Dilson with the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. And Gary Emeralds did not bring this up. So I've been working with a group of technology coordinators on behalf of MASA in regards to the student data provisions, and we've had lots of conversations with Representative Lucero over the interim and continued until last week. So I just wanted to let the members of the committee to know we will be providing a document with some feedback on the kind of four major points of concern with some suggested language. I did want to just respond specifically to the audit trail language. Yes, there is the exception, but for the date of January 1st, 2019, that's not very far away. And from the technology coordinator's perspective, this capability does not exist. It's not a requirement of federal law. So to their knowledge, this would be only a requirement that would be required for school districts in Minnesota, which could provide additional cost. We do have some suggestions for Representative Lucero, which we will provide to him, and as well as to you and Representative Erickson and Senator Scott or Representative Scott as well. So appreciate your attention.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Dolzlin. All right, Mr. Heller, you can have 30 seconds. Come on forward.
Rick Heller, unofficial representative, twice exceptional people with frank disabilities, speaking at the policy committee on the 11th or the 12th of April. Anyhow, I'm assuming I'm not going to be able to talk about unifier system because I don't believe your documents are posted online that I provided to your LA. Is that correct?
Mr. Heller, I'll talk to you about this after committee. Do you have some comments on the policy bill?
I guess I won't have to talk about that or twice exceptional as it relates to that, so I'll have to wait on that. As far as the MCA growth school, every MCA provides an independent reading level from one grade to the next. It's personalized to each student. There is a growth model. If the State Department wants to come out and yield that question, obviously I'll take that as a yes from them. They have created three different sub-bands within each grade. Again, if it's a growth model, specifically individualized for each student, you already got the growth model. You don't have to compare it to the next grade because every kid's going to have an individual plan eventually. We all know that. My suggestion to the ones that can't figure out dyslexia, spelling is a critical piece of dyslexia. If they ain't doing spelling, they ain't doing their work. And they better integrate that with the reading. And at some point, you're going to do read out loud. And SocialSecurity.gov has a plugin called Browse Aloud that highlights and reads the words out for you. You could apply 508, too, for the districts that don't want to apply 508, not just 504. Everybody will benefit from Universal Design for Learning. Also, the writing rules in the dyslexia bill. So they're going to define that later. Nobody mentioned that. Rule writing. Get involved in that because that's going to help define, not from the top down, meaning higher education teaching teachers, but from the bottom up. They're having a difficult time in higher education to accept this. So they decided to go from the bottom up. As far as the, if anybody knows it, but they moved the thinking level, cognitive load, or lexile level up by three grade levels, too. On the MCAs, they went from degree of power reading to lexile on the national level. As far as the...
All right, Mr. Heller, I'm sorry, I have to have you wrap this up.
The special education advisory I've shared some information with a few members here on selection, acquisition, and use as it relates to labor law. This is the Minnesota pipeline on assistive technology services under labor law. That's why it needs to be in, some meat has to be on the bone in that committee when you have that discussion. And I'm still hoping to have a lasting, at least a informational hearing, because I believe the State Department of Education has not yet, again, not yet set the level of the special education text complexity from 5 years ago. That's my request. Thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Heller.
Madam Chair?
President Debbie.
How are we doing on targets?
Well, which is why we're needing to end quickly so I could go to a meeting.
I was wondering about that.
All right. So with that, members, please watch in your emails for announcements about plans for next week. And with that, we are adjourned.